This is the Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine, where a portion of this interview will appear in print. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 30th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm super pleased to have with me Ken Van Wyk. Hi, Ken.
How are you doing, Gary?
I'm good. Ken Van Wyk is a principal and founder of KRVW Associates, a consulting boutique focused on many aspects of software security and incidents response. Ken has been an active computer security practitioner for decades. Among his firsts, Ken was the first employee of CERT and has also been a very active member of the FIRST community, two different firsts. And Ken has two books on the market, Secure Coding and Incident Response. And he's working on a third book now, which will be included in the Addison Wesley Software Security series that I edit. Ken lives in the DC area with his wife Karen and some Basset Hounds. And he has a degree in mechanical engineering from Lehigh University, which is in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and not Chicago. Ken also runs SCL, the most important software security mailing list. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thanks, Gary. Good to be here.
Good to read that bio again.
Yeah.
So let's start with mechanical engineering. On the first day of class, mechanical engineering students get the bejesus scared out of them with the famous story of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
And on the other hand, computer scientists start their first day of class writing Hello World and being told they can do anything at all. So why doesn't computer science focus on learning from failure like mechanical engineering does?
Boy, I wish I had a good answer for you on that one, Gary. But, coming from mechanical engineering, it just seemed so natural to look at history because there is such a rich history there. But we don't have that same history in computer science.
I know that in some of your work, you try to trot out some of those stories and tell people about software failure. Have you found that that's effective?
I think that they hear the story and they appreciate it, but I'm not quite sure that they internalize it quite the same way as somebody who's responsible for designing a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Do you suppose that's because of the whole way that we certify different types of engineers, or don't, as the case may be?
There's an element to that. There's also an element to when you're sitting there looking at code, it's kind of abstract. You don't really connect it to the physical realm of how this stuff is going to be used in the same way that when you're putting an I-beam across a couple of supports, you know?
So I guess we should all try to do our part to understand failure and avoid it.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of my pet peeves in this industry.
Did that have anything to do with choosing the bridge on the front cover of Secure Coding?
That was, in fact, the essence of that bridge. When we were talking to O'Reilly, I don't know, 5.5 years or so ago, the vision that I painted was to have a blueprint of a bridge, but the imagery that we wanted to get across was the process of designing something that human lives depend on. And that sounds melodramatic in a software sense, but it's really important to think of that sort of magnitude when it comes to designing everything right down to the mundane stuff of input validation.
Right. So you've been an active participant in real-world computer security for many years with DISA and CERT and other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
How has computer security evolved and changed in the years that you've been working in the field?
Well, I think the biggest shift that I've seen is the attackers 20 years ago when I got into the industry, the attackers were doing it very much for headlines and bragging rights. And nowadays, they're clearly in it for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the same attackers or new attackers that have come along, it's a money industry now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're making progress as a discipline?
In some areas, and in other ways, we're making steps that are backwards.
So, explain that a bit.
Well, 20 years or so ago, and you know, I say that and I sound like I've been doing this for centuries, but 20 years or so ago, in the software world, I think that there was more thought given to design of systems, and the web came along and changed all that. It accelerated things. The pace of play has moved up significantly. And maybe that was the web, maybe it was the whole .com thing. But nowadays, we do things a lot more quickly. And I think that less and less thought is given into the design phase. And I really think that's a fundamental mistake that we're making.
That's interesting. So I guess you have strong feelings about agile methodologies and maybe XP.
I do, you know, and I think that agile, the concept is fine, but when it's taken to the extreme of, and I don't mean in an extreme programming way, but when agile is taken too far and it's really just kind of everybody go deep, then we really have some problems. I think that we need to focus a lot of attention at the design area. And I think that you can accomplish that in the agile world, but I think that it's unfortunately not often done that way.
Right, right. So do you think that big splashy stories about incidents and data breaches help or hurt? I'm sort of thinking about, you know, the TJX story in particular.
Yeah, I think they do a little bit of both, actually. I think that every time a developer gets a step closer to really being able to internalize why this is all important, I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times the stories seem so extreme and bordering on melodramatic that we tend to kind of just filter that out of our lives, like the latest tragedy in wherever with a car bombing or something. We tend to kind of just filter that out, mm-hmm. because it seems to be on the headlines all the time.
And, you know, the market seems sort of blind to our concerns, because if you actually look at the performance of TJX stock, it's been up since the security tsunami.
Yeah, it hasn't seemed to have gone down since all the disclosure of all their problems. It has gone up, and that has absolutely flabbergasted me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess that would have Marcus Raynham say something like, I guess we should have data breaches in all the places. So,
yeah, that would be unfortunate.
So you were the first employee of CERT.
That's right, yeah.
Can you tell us an interesting computer security war story from the CERT days, preferably one that relates to software?
Well, okay, so one of my earliest recollections there was, I remember a phone call at, I don't know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the pager goes off, and there was an incident at a university. I won't name them, it's not important, but they told me that they were under attack from Cornell University, which of course was where Robert Morris was from.
Yeah, Internet Worm.
And you know, they had looked at the packet traces, and they were all concerned because they were seeing these SMTP packets coming from Cornell, and they assumed the worst. And when they dug deeper into it, and probably by about lunchtime that same day, it turned out that there was a bug in their Unix kernel that was coming in a software way. Their Unix kernel, I remember it was a DEC Alteryx kernel. The TCP datagram index array was a signed integer, and in comes this 64 meg or a 64K packet that was taking the index and running it past 32,767, and all of a sudden bad things happened in their kernel. And, you know, what appeared to be an attack from Cornell turned out to just be a software upgrade that was incompatible.
Ah, software.
Yeah, and the human side of that, too. You know, they saw these packets coming from Cornell, and they thought, oh, my God, we're under attack. It's got to be a new worm. And, you know, 2 plus 2 ended up equaling 22 there.
Which overflowed the buffer by one.
Exactly.
So how did you get interested in software security, and when did you decide to write secure coding?
Well, the two things were probably a decade plus apart.
Wow.
I actually got interested in software security when I was still working at Lehigh in the late mid-1980s, before anybody knew what a computer virus was, other than a very small crew of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it intrigued me. It certainly piqued my interest, and took a job over at Carnegie Mellon when the CERT was standing up there, and kind of progressed along the way. But I had done, when I worked at the Department of Defense, we had done a lot of things that we now call penetration testing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that always concerned me was that my customers were asking me, are we secure? And in doing a penetration test, I knew that the best answer I could come up with was, well, you're not secure, or you are not secure, but I couldn't say, yes, you're secure.
Right. The badnessometer effect.
You know, exactly. And so I knew that we had to, I call it swimming upstream. I knew that we had to get closer to the software before we could answer that question. So that was just a natural draw to me. And I had enough background in software that I knew that firewalls and IDSs and all those fun sort of product things couldn't answer that fundamental question.
So, you know, later, I guess 10 years later, what sparked you to write secure coding?
What sparked me, actually quite pragmatically, was my co-author, Mark Graff, called me on the phone. I was on vacation in Hawaii at the time and said, would you co-author this with me? So, you know, very simply, that's what happened. But more importantly, as I said, I knew that we had to go upstream, and I knew that we had to focus our attention at software. Otherwise, we could never answer that fundamental question.
So you and Mark are at it again, right?
We are again, sure. Mark is my co-author again this time, and we're having a lot of fun with this one.
So what can we expect to see in the new one?
In this one, kind of the underlying concept is, I coined it confluence, because the information security folks need to think software, and the software folks really, really need to have a better understanding of what the InfoSec guys have been staring at for years.
Right. Especially, I guess, from an attacker perspective.
Right. You know, we focus so much on things like functional specification and building things that are supposed to do what we intend them to do, but we don't think enough about what they're not supposed to do, and that's where the problems come in.
So I want to talk about that confluence just a little bit more. As one of your specialties in computer security, you worked on forensics for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking lately about network security people and ops people and working with software security, but I'm wondering about this notion of monitoring software and how that might be useful or not useful when you're taking a look at, you know, trying to stop fraud. Fraud mm-hmm. detection. I know that, you know, when you were working with ParaProtect, you sort of worked on some of that stuff too, huh? So what do you think about this notion of monitoring at the application level?
Well, first of all, I have to say that monitoring is absolutely vital. That's kind of where, I jokingly say, where the rubber hits the router, right? And that's where you're looking at what's happening in the systems right now. But it's been my experience in doing hundreds and hundreds of incident response operations where you go in kind of after the building is burned down, you get called in and we say, you got to figure out what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
You can almost always rely on the fact that you're going to have some monitoring data from the network components, from the firewalls, even from the web servers, but once you start talking about application servers and the application itself, the monitoring pretty much goes to zero.
Mm-hmm.
With very few exceptions, you just don't have enough data there to work with.
So the idea would be to understand the problem and try to build in some of that monitoring and logging capability to help with fraud detection and to help with forensics.
Right. So what I always encourage people to think about, software developers understand use cases, right? So if you think about the use case of an incident responder who's been called in, the attack has happened, the money's been stolen, or whatever bad thing has happened, the incident responder comes in and is told, I need you to figure out what happened. Is it ongoing? Are we losing money? What's the problem? So what do you have to work with? You have the log data most often and not a whole lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you figure out from that? And if you have all the network logs, we can say, well, it looks like an attack came from this IP number. But the business owner says, okay, great. How much money was lost? What's the issue? And because the applications aren't telling us enough, the best we can say is, well, I'm sorry. It looks like you got broken into from this IP number from this time to this time. what happened during that session, I pretty much have no visibility into.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's something that deserves more attention, clearly.
Hugely. And that's one of the core topics that we're trying to tackle in our Confluence book.
Good. So in terms of software security, my view is that we've made a fair amount of progress over the last few years. And in particular, it seems to me that we've made more progress against bugs, kind of code-level defects, than we have against flaws, which are design-level defects. And I'm wondering whether you agree with that and whether you think that we should expect some progress on the sort of architectural risk analysis, threat modeling, stride front.
Mm-hmm. So I do agree with that in large degree. I think that if you look at something like, for example, the OWASP top 10 list, we've made, I think, pretty good strides. If you look at numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4, for example, things like cross-site scripting, SQL injection, I think that we really understand those attacks pretty darn well. There's a lot of libraries out there for doing things like input validation, for doing things like safe SQL calls. Even though I think that not enough people are using those things, I think that the problem space is very well understood, so I agree with that. And I agree that the design level things like up to access control at the application layer, for example, I think that that is probably the next frontier that we really, really, really need to focus attention on.
Do you think that targeting software architects for some sort of special intensive training is a good idea?
I do think it's a good idea. I don't think our work is done at the coding bug level by any means, but I think that it's well understood.
Right, so we've made more progress there.
We've made progress, but we have a lot of work to do still to really, you know, kind of think of it in terms of technology transition. We need to take that thinking and that the understanding and make sure that every developer is doing that stuff, and that's the tough part.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see some pull from our customers at Sigital on the architecture front for the first time, which is good.
Yeah.
We've always provided those services, but now people are saying, gosh, can you teach our architects? Can you give us a talk about ARA and things like that, which is nice to see.
Yeah, those are all positive signs, absolutely.
So I have another sort of crazy question about the space, and that is there seems to be a very intense focus these days on web applications. And I'm wondering if you think that that's good or bad for software security.
I do see a big focus on that, and I see it from the driver side coming largely from PCI compliance. I get a lot of requests from my customers asking me to come in and help out because of some PCI compliance requirement that they have.
Right.
And it's oftentimes web app focused because a lot of that transaction space happens in the web application world. But if you kind of drill a little bit deeper into the problems they're facing, input validation, authentication, session management, with the possible exception of session management, the rest of those are all relevant to every type of software that we have, really.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they might bring you in the front because of a web application problem, the issues you deal with are relevant to all sorts of software. So I see it as a good thing overall.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I guess my main concern would be if people solve the web problem and think about it and then stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I haven't really seen, but, you know.
But the world is obviously a whole lot bigger than just web applications. Even the web services world, SOA world that we're dealing with now, even those web-related technologies, most people wouldn't really think of that as a web application per se.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I wanted to thank you for running SCL, so thanks for that.
Oh, I enjoy that. It's one of the things that I feel is kind of a duty that it's important to give back to the community.
And I wondered, you know, how's that community faring? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Is it, you know, what's the, how do the traffic patterns look and stuff like that from your
honestly,
perspective?
I kind of see it remaining kind of stagnant right now. It's mm-hmm. It's not growing a lot. It's not shrinking. The traffic ebbs and flows. I'd love to see it get a whole lot bigger, but I also don't have the time cycles to be out there cheerleading for it a whole lot.
Right. You hear that, you guys? Time for some cheerleading.
Yeah, exactly.
And then last question, and on a personal note, having dined out with you many, many times.
In a lot of cities.
In a lot of different cities. I know how much you appreciate good food and wine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if there's a good, moderately priced red wine that you want to recommend to the Silver Bullet listeners.
Oh, a good, moderately priced red wine. You know, I'd be looking at Northern Italians.
Uh-huh.
I would be looking at Barbera d'Asti. Very few people even know what that is. It's from the Piedmont area of Italy, and you can get a beautiful Barbera for $15 to $20 that will just rock your world as a beautiful red wine.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for your time.
Sure, Gary. It's been a real pleasure. I always enjoy it.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. The September-October 2008 issue of IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine is a special issue dedicated to virtualization, co-edited by Sean Smith and Sam King. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine, and it's syndicated by InformIT. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.